A few years ago, I was invited by a professor. I've spoken at most of the universities in the area over the years. But one year I was invited to, a couple years ago, to speak at Evergreen State College, which is in Olympia, which is the most liberal college of our system. They don't give grades. And, you know, it's all very progressive and liberal. And so I'm there. I walk in to the campus building that I'm supposed to lecture in. And I have a 90-minute lecture that I'm going to give. When I got there, it wasn't a classroom. It was a lecture hall. And this professor walks in that had invited me. And I'd been there before. And I said, this is a lecture hall. I said, why don't you have me in a classroom where I can actually interact with the students? And he said, oh, this is a campus-wide thing. We've got posters up. And then I saw, then he went back up to the back, it's a tiered place, has 60 seats. And he went up to the back and he's talking to two other professors while having taught. I saw the demeanor and the looks they were giving. And I thought, oh my gosh, this is a setup. They want to have me as an example of the folly of religion. And that's why I'm here. And so I'm thinking, so I said this little prayer. It's not exactly an Orthodox prayer. Help!
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it is, really. And so I stood up and I said, usually I'll lecture for an hour and have a half hour of questions. But I'm going to reverse that. And when I said I'm going to reverse it, and I said I'm going to ask for questions, and we'll take it from where you want to go, not where I'm wanting to go.
He's answering you.
And so I heard, I looked at these three professors, and they were kind of like, oh, we got them. Look. And lo and behold, the first question. Young man, midway up in the middle, he raises his hands and he says, my question is this. Why should I care about anything you have to say? I'm an atheist. Oh, yes. But I was prepared for him. Because I had watched a lecture, a debate that took place at Cambridge University in England. It was a lecture or a debate between deists and atheists. And among the atheists was Dr. Dawkin. Crazy guy. Christopher Dawkin. And then on the deist side, among the deists, the one I remember was Dr. Rowan Williams, now retired Archbishop of Canterbury. He was duly retired in this lecture, in this debate. And so I was both high school and college debate. And I taught debate in a high school as well. And so I know a lot about debate. And I'm watching this. And, you know, you don't have to be right to win a debate. You just have to be good. And I'm looking at this back and forth. And these are six people, three on one side and three on the other, that are, you know, at the height of their careers in their academic world. And I'm thinking, oh, gosh, and then being in Cambridge University in this huge lecture hall with all the students, and they're all told that you will decide who wins by which door you go out. If you go out the left-hand door, the deists win. If you go out the right-hand door, the atheists win. If you go out the middle door, you don't know.
Yeah.
And so I'm watching this, and all of a sudden I knew that the deists won. It was the moment that one of the atheists sided with Rowan Williams. Because Rowan Williams, who was greatly influenced by orthodoxy, shared that, like quantum physics, or and he shared that that in Christianity, that we come face to face with truth and are able to receive truth in a noetic way, and on the noetic knowledge of the heart. And that it's not about intellect, it's about this intuitive connection that happens. And Dawkins just totally lambasted him and, you know, acted like an idiot. And one of the atheists spoke up, and he said to Dawkins, "You sound more and more like an angry tele-evangelist." And then he said, "I am a quantum physicist. And in quantum physics, 80% of what we discover to be true is discovered noetically and intuitively. And then after we've discovered it, then we find a way to accept that this is true, that this is the way it is. But we don't use the physical sciences to discover this." And he said, "I think that's what Rowan Williams is saying." And Rowan Williams, and you know, they won. The deists won. And it was that moment that made... So, I told him that story about quantum physics. I said, "Do you believe that quantum physics is a true science?" And he said, "Of course I do." And I said, "Are you aware that 80% of what quantum physicists believe to be true is not proven in the material scientific world?" And when I said that, it was like you could hear a pin drop. And then you saw this look of disappointment on those poor professors. And it went from there. And then I talked about how most people who are turning to atheism are not turning away from God, they're turning away from a false image of God that has been delivered to them through Calvinist theology, which is so predominant in Western world, that even you'll find Lutherans and Anglicans who were never Calvinists believing in Calvinist teachings about who God is. That somehow God is this righteous judge who is so scandalized by your sin that he wants you, that he's demanding that you accept the sacrificial atonement of his son in order to be saved. This is only a little tiny splice of it. There's some Antiochian deacon I saw do this with a bunch of chairs, but you've seen this. But here's God, and here's me. And my sin, from a Reformed theologian's point of view, when I sin, God turns his back on me. From an Orthodox point of view, when I sin, I turn my back on God. And then God does this. I sin again, and I turn my back on God. See the difference. And when you share this with these young people who are declared atheists, they've never considered this before. And when you share that image of God with a little boy, you know, that I talked about earlier, that the little boy who's standing there with his fist clenched, and he says, "I hate you, Daddy," and Daddy grabs him and tickles him and says, "But Daddy loves you." You know, God is not keeping a tab. It's not like God has this list of who's been naughty and nice. And I told that young atheist, I said, the God you denied exists is the same God I deny exists. Same God. I don't believe in that God. I said, you're describing, I asked him to describe God. And at the end of it, I said, you know, the God you just described is an angry Santa who has got a list of who's been naughty and nice. That's not the Orthodox God. And you know, people that say that that Muslims worship the same God, they don't worship the same God. The Muslim God isn't much different than the Calvinist God. Only he's got a list of you will do this, this, and this. And we have a God who invites us in to communion with him. He invites us to be transformed by the Holy Spirit and be one with him. That's a very different image of God. And the God that we encounter is the same God that has created this beautiful universe with a cosmos filled with the most brilliant stars. It's the same God that created the kitten that purrs in your hands. It's the same God that gives you the ability to love a child. It's the same God that invites us into the divine liturgy. And when we think about what is the liturgy, what is the divine liturgy? It is the place where we enter in where there's neither time nor space. And we enter into the heavenly realm, and we become partakers in the heavenly banquet, not in the by and by, but now. Now we are there. Every time we enter into the divine liturgy, we are participants in the heavenly banquet that is ongoing. And the times you're standing there thinking, oh, boy, I'm sure tired. I wish I didn't have to stand for this liturgy or this long vigil service. Think about it as dress rehearsal for eternity. When we are participants in this ongoing banquet, this extravagant moment in eternity, when we are all together with the angels and the archangels and all the heavenly hosts, standing before the throne of God, worshiping the Holy Trinity. And then juxtaposition that image to the Muslim image of all the virgins. I saw a great picture once, and it said something about, imagine their shock when they discovered that the virgins that they were promised, and then it showed all these Roman Catholic nuns in their full garb with assault weapons. But that is a huge difference. We don't worship the same God. Just like we don't worship the God of the Calvinists. It's a cruel God that would condemn people who don't know Jesus to eternal hellfire, I think. Well, what about people who are not believers? God knows the heart. What about my Viking ancestors? There were some good ones there, I think. But what about them? Because they didn't know the gospel and they didn't know about Jesus Christ, does that mean that automatically they are going to have eternal fire? I doubt it. St. Paul himself said that, what did he say? I'm losing it here. He talked about how we can know God through divine law. We can encounter God through the divine law, which is why the early Russian monks that came to Alaska were able to see the truth of the Alaskan people's religion that was in there. It wasn't the fullness of Orthodox truth.
But what they did have, there was much that was true. And so the monks respected the indigenous religion. They didn't go in there like the Presbyterians and the Catholics and say, you're pagans and you're going to go to hell. They didn't say that because they didn't believe that. So later, when after they'd become friends and knew the language, the Aleuts or the Tlingits or the Eskimos would ask them, now, what do you believe? And then they were able to show the similarities. Because these people had an encounter with the Creator. It just wasn't complete. Much like the Old Testament Jews. The Israelites had an encounter with God. And people say, oh, look at the Old Testament. It's all full of dashing children against rocks and you know, going in and killing people to have their lands and all that stuff. You know, and Yahweh told them to do it.